Hey, it's the Low Life, Podcast. Do you know anything about cowboys? Can you jam to the console cowboys and services? Ever read Neuro Matrix? Ever experienced a new way?
Get the meat. Yeah, found us. It's the Low Life Podcast. I am CoinOps McGillicuddy. I am going to expand this window. Who else is here?
Hello.
That's Scum.
Hi.
That's Shadow Link.
And welcome back once again, intrepid listeners.
That's Zero. All right, right off the top, we're going to get some business in the coming months. Podcast releases are going to be sporadic. I just wanted to prepare you guys for this. All right,
if they weren't already,
I'm actually calling it an audible and bumping the deadline of the fucking telephone shit because things are getting in the way.
The heat is on. Okay, you know the man's
the heat's on, but you know by August or so, you know, like things will level off again.
And we'll be back. Things happen, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be real busy. Anyhow, but don't fret. In the meantime, still going to be publishing stuff on neondystopia.com.
Yes, always going to be on that.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll still be doing stuff. Like, we'll still be coming out with episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still coming up with stuff. We're on the Discord, too, if you want to just come and hang out. And Neondystopia isn't going anywhere, so.
As always, be active on the Discord with our fans and our friends. Love to see you there. And find us at... Neon Dystopia on the Patreon.
Yep.
Patreon.com/Neon Dystopia. Drop us a dollar if you would like to support us. And by support us, I mean help us pay writers.
Yes.
Help us pay writers to publish fiction. That's what we do.
Yeah, right. That's where our money's going right now. Thank you to all of our current patrons.
Yeah.
You help us publish stories about oranges.
Bingo.
All the commentaries. That was a really good one. Value added.
Story, right? Sorry, yes. what was that, Zero?
Oh, the added commentary is just value added proposition from us.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It is a little more difficult to find us, but it's L0WL1F3. That's the bar to entry. Literally, just spell it in leaf speak, and you got us.
Yeah.
What's difficult at this point? Google sucks. Social media is dying.
Yeah. You know,
they're about to try to shove AI into these Apple phones, and I'm just like, wow. So I guess this is the last model Apple phone I'm ever going
to
have.
I like to think of us in like the Discord as, you know, the unmarked door bar in like a big city, you know, that kind of goes down a few steps.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, basement bar.
And it's a neon light bulb. Yeah.
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 How'd you know the world find us? But, you know, but we're still going to be here, you know.
We got electricity down there. We just don't have any no cell signal.
Nope.
Yeah, you can do your deals in the dirty basement.
That'd be a pretty cool fetish club.
Patreon keeps us from having to take fucking sponsors. So
Once again, who
we got in the docket? Who's trying to get our attention?
Take a look here and see who we have. And today we're looking at a proposal from Bloodbags Anonymous.
Okay, this has potential.
Interested in life extension, but worried about the medical red tape required for such treatments. Tired of insurers acting as gatekeepers to the life-extending blood you crave. Are you unable or unwilling to perform the interpersonal functions required to work with a team of experts? Bianon offers frictionless delivery of blood source only from free-range alpha male high-quality chads.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. All right. See, I thought this was going to be a vampire thing, but it's not. It's just going to be the
weird guy.
I thought maybe you would witness me in Valhalla or some shit, but
it might have been kind of cool, but no.
Hey, Zero, can you meet me after the show?
Literal bloodsuckers, people.
What was that fucking Willem Dafoe, Ethan Hawke vampire movie?
Oh, Daybreakers. Yeah,
Daybreakers. Yeah, the movie rocks.
Yeah. See, they could use that.
Yeah, they can, not me.
But we're not talking about that movie. No. We're talking about a movie that when I saw it, I really enjoyed it. And watching it again just in the last couple of days, two times on YouTube at 144p, and the P is for potato. I can tell you I still enjoy this fucking movie.
Okay, that's good.
You did that yourself.
I saw it, and it was great. It looked like an impressionistic animation. It almost looked like AI could never do this.
We were talking about this before. I think I saw this first time in the theater, yep. Like 92 or 93, I guess. And it was fun and then funny at the end. And I remember like not really liking it, kind of panning it with my friends. Watched it again maybe 10 or 12 years ago and remembering how much it really held up. And then again, now for this, wondering, is it just like seriously the state of movies today, or is this just much better than I remember it being? Because
I think it's a little bit of it, it's a little bit of both.
A little bit of column A. I agree with that.
Yeah. So Free Jack is a riot. It's got like basically it's a Mick Jagger movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a great movie, but it is definitely it's so much fun.
It's entertaining.
It really is. Yeah.
Now we're gonna talk about Mick Jagger.
Knowing that Mick was in it was definitely what got us out to the theater to see her. Like, oh, he's in it. Okay, he's acting. Let's check it out.
Yeah, we have to see this. And what you got to understand, this came out 3 years after Steel Wheels was released. And then there was the Steel Wheels tour, which was massive. And I was like, by the time this movie came out, I was tired. I was working in a record store that got play at least once a day. And I was just over it. And I didn't even think it was their best work. You know, so I didn't even want to be seeing like purse-lipped Mick Jagger lanking his way around this, you know, movie.
Which makes sense, right?
Because then we see it, and he's like, at the time, we were like, he's the worst part of this movie. And we're like walking to Pizza Hut talking about like, man, you know, somebody needs to like coach him and like teach him how to act. So here I am watching this 2 days ago, and I'm like, this motherfucker showed up.
Yeah.
Like he's owning this. He's always wanted this, you know. And it's funny because he's such a skinny dude, but then he's got these like awesome trench coats and shit.
Oh yeah, movie. God, man, yep. I want his coat.
His wardrobe is pretty fucking cool.
It's on point.
Yeah.
And he's great. He's absolutely fantastic. He's hands down like my rewatch of this is like he's my favorite thing about this fucking. Yeah. Him and Amanda Plummer are my favorite things about this movie.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that his character, like you can tell that he's just having a blast. Mick Jagger, the actor, is having a blast. But that's in character. That's perfectly in character for.
That's how he wants to play this guy,
Victor Vasendic.
Yeah,
that's his name. That's his.
Yeah.
Gives him the fucking tank commander helmet, like all the gear.
Oh my god, the
part
helmet.
Of part of
goofy looking, it's great.
Part of the problems this movie experienced was that the creatives that were producing it ended up being at odds with the executives who were like funding everything. They just kept butting heads. The director is actually says the production company is Morgan Creek. The director they had worked with before, he made Young Guns 2 for them, so he'd also worked with Emilio Estevez.
Right, yeah.
And the production company had kind of given him a little bit of a hands-off.
Who's the director?
His name is Jeff Murphy.
Okay.
And I guess most famous movie is The Quiet Earth.
Oh.
Yeah, the New Zealand movie.
I was just telling you guys about that.
Yeah.
I know.
That movie is fucking incredible, and I didn't even make that connection. Hold on, son of a bitch. That movie is awesome, guys.
So they they kind of wanted to do a sci-fi movie in like the Arnold Schwarzenegger mold of 60s sci-fi novel converted to 80s action film.
Yeah, they picked one of my favorite fucking writers.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm sorry, but that book sucks. Immortality Inc.
Yeah, but
it's pretty racist.
Robert Sheckley's short fiction is some of the funniest shit I've ever read in my life. Like, let me give you an example. The way he works is he's very funny. And he has this one story, I think it's called The Language of Love, where this guy, he's like dating this girl and he really wants to He really wants to get it right when he tells her what he feels about her. So he goes off to this planet where apparently there's this like entire just culture of people who have devoted themselves to trying to explain the love itself. You know, how people experience it, how it's different for everyone and all this other stuff. And the guy gets to this planet. And there's only one fucking guy there. Everybody else is dead. And he stays with him for a few years and he like learns everything. And then he comes back and just all this time has passed. And she's like, oh my God, you know, like you're back. And he's like, yeah, I figured it out. And she's like, what is it? And he goes, I kind of like you.
All that figuring.
It was great.
That's adorable. Wow. Immortality. Well,
he also had another one, though. I can't remember what it was called, but it was these like two guys in a fucking airport bar. And the one guy's explaining why he has jet lag. And the reason for it is because your soul has to walk. Like when you get into a plane,
I've actually heard this. Fly, yeah.
Yeah. Like you land someplace and your soul doesn't go with you because it's a spirit. It's not like tied to an airplane.
That's funny because Immortality Inc. does have a lot of really interesting concepts to do with the soul and the afterlife and supernatural issues that they completely drop for free, Jack. But hearing the description of it, because I did not go and read it for this, but the description sounds a little bit more like Altered Carbon, where like bodies and consciousness are commodities that you can like sell and trade and. Some interesting stuff. This kind of a mirror of this, but not exactly.
Shetty has a short story about birds that are drones.
He invented that. That's awesome. I think as far as
check out his short stuff. It's great.
Well, Scum, you were like, why is it racist? Why is Immortality?
Okay, so in Immortality Inc., there is one black character, and he's only ever referred to as the Negro. He's never given a name and is only ever called that. And then he just vanishes.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie doesn't exactly.
Oh, God. Does he vanish? Does he vanish magically?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
In the book, too, it's kind of neat because the guy who's brought into the future is brought there as part of like a promotional stunt by a corporation to bring someone back from the past.
Oh,
apparently the main pastime in the future is hunting poor people for sport. So we got that to look forward to.
Wow.
Holy fuck.
God damn it.
And Shockley also said something like when asked about science fiction, he said science fiction is the junk food of the mind or something like that. I don't know. I was like, well, buddy, I hate to tell you what the tech icons and moguls today are looking to for inspiration.
It's like, well, fuck you.
And here, ironically, he's actually a really fun, like he's kind of like Stephen King. We're like, yeah, I like the books. Okay. The novels are fine. They're of a time. They're very much time capsule-y, very much so. The short stories, however, are these like really intensely crafted things. The guy's craft is undeniable and he's thoughtful. Like he was pulling left turns in like 15 pages on me that I just didn't see coming based on how he set it up. And it wasn't,
we can say the story has more interesting concepts and blatant racism as opposed to the movie, which kind of crafted a better flowing story.
And they adapted and this novel and it was
slight
like
racism because, you know, you have some really interesting like brown and black characters off to the side that show up, but you don't get enough time.
I do like the bodyguard's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
He's great. He gets like the Katana Tech 9 thing going on.
I thought that
we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that when it comes.
Like Ripper seemed like he had something really interesting going on. Anyways,
they adapted this and they had a couple different writers. One of the guys who worked on Total Recall, and they put a movie together. And they kept saying from the dailies to keep pushing the action. So the director kept trying to do that, even though his vision was different for the movie. The people that they had in-house production weren't listening to the director; they were listening to production. So they ended up with this movie that they sent it straight to test audiences, and it bombed. Rewrote, and they actually had to end up reshooting 40% of this movie and putting it together like in the editing. It's
that kind of that tracks. You can kind of tell a little bit.
You can.
Well, you know what though? I didn't notice it. I actually think it kind of helped because it made me kind of really like these characters.
Yeah, there are just some parts in it that it.
That's crazy that reshoots would improve a thing.
The worst part is the reshoots are when they added the interpersonal relationships and the humor and the things that the director originally wanted to put in, but the studio kept telling him to leave out. Like the studio wanted a much dumber movie than the director wanted to make.
Yeah, of course.
And I'll tell you what, as far as the action goes, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's good.
For real.
I it's not embarrassing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like this movie is literally
fun to watch.
It's the opposite of Swordfish.
Yes.
And at the end of it, the director had a lot of problems with the studio. Again, the CEO of the studio ended up stepping in to do a bunch of stuff. He decided that he would be better at editing it. The problem was that he had no idea how to edit. So he ended up taking all the shots, hiring three different teams of editors to edit it simultaneously. And he's running between all three rooms telling him what to do.
And it's incredible that this was even coherent.
Right?
It's incredible this movie got made. It really is. We're like, not like, all right, we're cutting funding. Fuck this.
And by the end of it, Jeff Murphy was like, I want to have my possessory credit removed. This is not Jeff Murphy. Yeah. This is no longer my baby. And he tried to get fired a couple times. He tried to do a contract breach, but they were really dicks about it. It was just a real bad scene for him.
Yeah. Man.
That's fascinating.
It's crazy. This was like good.
Yeah. Well, normally, okay, look.
When you read everything about the production, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, there are normally, when this happens to a film, like, it's either it never sees the light of day, or it just becomes the biggest piece of garbage.
Yeah.
But, like, I think all of this bullshit improved the film.
Kind of. Weird.
You know, back when that shit actually worked, because people actually cared about, I don't know, making,
a like, final
releasing
product.
A good movie.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays, it would have just really released a shitty version straight to streaming. You know, that's what they would have done today.
Yeah.
And it's weird because this movie is like so by the numbers, it transcends it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, like, it's one of those things where, like, if you start watching it, next thing you know, you're 20 minutes in.
Oh, yeah. that is
for real.
You know, like, this thing explodes out of the gate. Mm-hmm. Like, it has this, like, oh, morning. There's this, like, really annoying fucking, like, oh, man. There's, like, okay, I got a couple of things we need to talk about real quick.
Well, let's go and open. Let's open it. You want to talk about the
I want to talk about two specific sounds. Two specific sounds at two different times in the movie. The first one is the alarm clock at the beginning. Jesus Christ. Wow.
Well, it says in my notes for that scene, because I barely took notes for this movie because it goes by so fucking fast.
Yeah.
My only note is ass, because we get to see like Emilio Estevez's
in his tidy whiteies.
Veiled. It's thinly veiled.
I didn't notice because I was like looking away from the screen because the sound was just like, this is too loud. So. And then later on, when we'll get to it like in depth, but like when she takes him to the guy to like help him in a totally pointless scene. This guy has this like water bottle he keeps like sloshing, and it's like the loudest goddamn thing in the mix. And he keeps like bringing it up and slurping it. It's like they had that boomed or mic'd itself, and it was just like, what are you doing? Like,
I didn't even notice. Honestly.
Didn't notice. I think this is a moment where it's like, tell me how you have the ism without actually telling me you have the ism.
Point out your tism is.
It's
showing a little bit.
It was also like an upload that like was playing at 144p.
Yeah, I was going to say. You watched the unnecessary, because this is okay. Also, I don't know if we said it or not. This movie's on Tubi. Go watch it right now.
Yeah, so you can see what it actually looks like.
Yeah, pretty good rip on YouTube.
You watch the stepped-on bootleg version on purpose.
It kind of felt good though. It kind of felt like I'd found a VHS tape.
Which the movie opens in very title card VHS tape fashion, Free Jack, and the theme is kind of like Terminator meets Lost Boys, honestly. Yeah,
don't you miss the days when we had credits up at the beginning of a movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lost art.
With a eases cool you into song. It.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This movie is like Looper meets The Running Man. That's the best way I can describe it.
I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We open with an armored Columbine knight, and like it turns out Mick Jagger's not just a mercenary captain. He like has a fucking mechanized battalion at his beck and command. So
it's incredible.
It's so good.
They all just like stop on this like racetrack in front of a
dilapidated like, old sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's wearing this tank commander helmet. Let me explain this.
The helmet.
He's such a slender fella.
He is.
And he has the skinniest neck in the world. And it just looks like a cartoon. It looks like
it really does.
He looks older in the face. You know, he's been around for a minute. He's done the rock and roll thing. Okay. Mick Jagger, he's got a great face.
Mick Jagger looks like he the moment he turned 25, he's looked like
this forever.
He turned 60 and then he's stayed 60 forever.
That's the drugs.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Worst things could happen, I think.
So that's Victor Vasendek. That's that's Mick Jagger's character we're introduced
2000
to.
2000 AD ass villain.
I know he doesn't get top billing, but he is the main character for me.
And
he drives all the action. He's great.
Column is preceded by a bulldozer that's basically like knocking out a homeless camp to get to where they need to go. And there's some kind of scientific truck and a rig and a big like science pod. We'll call it the science pod.
It's pretty dope.
Just doctors wrapped in tinfoil.
This whole thing is extremely grounded and dope.
And yeah, you have to understand that this is the future, because they're kind of cutting back and forth between Emilio Estevez and Rene Russo, who's Alex and Julie, and this happening, and they're interspersing them both. And like you eventually, there's no title cards. There's no 2009. So you know the human race has become. You know, there's none of that explanation.
No explanation.
They just kind of drop you into these two cut scenes back and forth. And again, the editing.
You don't know exactly what's going on for a second.
They give you a second to sit with this. All you know is it's the future. Then when you find out when it's the future, I let out the loudest laugh.
And then there's some not great like dialogue between the two of them. You know, they're romantically involved. They need to get to the race. They get to the race. You meet his agent, who is
Mojo Nixon, man.
Brad is the character name, but he's Dave Johansson. He was in
Legend,
Scrooged, and New York Dolls. Yeah, I wondered if maybe he got that because he knew Mick from the rock scene in New York. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, he shows up in the craziest fucking places and he's always fun. Wasn't he the goddamn Super Mario Brothers movie as Toad?
Yes, he was, I think.
He was ubiquitous in that era. He would just show up and stuff.
He actually got to play music as Toad, which is the funny part.
Hang on. So the guy who played Brad is the same guy as Toad?
Yeah.
Yep.
Shit, really?
Yeah, he's just older.
That's wild.
Yeah, YouTube, look up fucking Mojo Nixon.
There's no way he was older. He would have to be younger.
He's got that Tom Waits thing.
Totally. Yeah.
Because this came out before Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, no, this guy's been around. Like, he's tours. He's like... Man.
This movie has a lot of people in it who just stopped aging at 25 and look like 60. You said it yourself, okay?
But the other really cool character we meet here is
David Johansson. Wait.
He was in Scrooged.
The other really cool character we meet here is Ripper, who's like the tech guy for the Bone Jackers.
Yeah. Played by awesome.
Isai Morales. And
he's awesome. I don't know why he has the one blacked out.
That's all I'm saying. He looks really cool. He's got one blacked out eye lens and a scar to boot. But then later he takes off the glasses and it's just...
I have an explanation for this. It's just because his eye doesn't look fucked up doesn't mean he no longer has use of it. His vision might just be so blurry he might as well be blind, and he has a light sensitivity.
They could throw a contact lens in there and it could be like the fact that
they don't explain it is compelling.
It really is.
It's a really cool character choice. Like a little augmented reality thing.
I was wondering that too. They didn't show that, but I was like, all right, I'll make that reach for this film.
So they have like a screen that they're showing like some real 90s era graphics of a race car.
Oh man, I love it.
You have to infer that they're setting up a singularity field. Like, how else are they going to do fucking time travel? I didn't know that when I was 12 years old watching this movie. I was like, all right, cool, science, electrics.
And again, no exposition, just orders.
Yeah.
And they're cutting back and forth. It's clear what happens.
Can I just say though, the tension in this scene makes no sense at all. Like,
yes, thank you. Because there's this big tension. There's a countdown. There's like these moments need to line up when he has an accident and he's dying in the past. And that's why they're here. Just bring him back to the future. But like, they're making this big thing of like the timelines matching up. And it's like, dude, this already happened. It's already happened in the past. You guys,
you don't have to count down. You can just hit the button and fucking.
Is it a power up? Like, what does it take time for the black hole?
It's old analog technology, man. Time travel technology.
It's not like where you Shadow. Kind of infer that, you know, the time machine has like a fixed time point that it sends people back.
No, because it's implying that.
They set up a whole machine.
Because we find out later they never found a body. And the reason they never found a body is because they plucked him from the past. So if they never plucked him from the past, this would have never happened. So it's a complete circle because time travel bullshit.
Yeah. Mm,
right.
But we're watching the movie. So.
Yeah, I mean, at least they didn't try to like explain that away.
Thank God.
You know.
It was smart enough to be interesting.
Yeah, and it happens so quickly. That you just go with it. They're just like, we need a reason to get Emilio Estevez away from Young Guns and into the future.
so he bounces into the pod like a Pop-Tart, like literally, boom, they just bounce down.
I really like, there's a moment before he like gets into the race where he's talking to, you know, potential sponsors with Brad.
Yeah.
One guy, like one of the suits steps forward and he's like, yeah, I'm champ. Well, he just says champion spark plug. It's nice to meet you. And then so Alex refers to him as Mr. Plugs.
Thank you, Mr. Like Plugs. That.
It's the delivery. His comedic delivery is pretty good in this.
Yeah.
They really want the script, kind of, they're trying to force him to be like a Arnold Schwarzenegger type one-liner.
Oh, you know what? I'm really glad. Honestly, that he did not, that there weren't really any one-liners in this movie at all. Like,
except for when he uses a Terminator one.
There was a couple.
Where was that?
There's some banter.
He straight up says, fucking, what's he say from Terminator?
I'll be back. No, I'll be back. It's, I wrote it down. Hang on. We'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
But there are a couple one-liners.
Straight up, he's quoting
how it's written.
In his world, like in this universe, Terminator exists as a film.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, and did you guys notice how Alex's car is named the Black Swan?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you, asshole. That's what he says. Fuck you, asshole.
That's right. And he does it with like a little Arnold affectation.
It's Terminator subroutine. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Anyways. Like, it's funny because I really like that cut when he's in the race and then, you know, everything goes wrong because like it's an F1 car and you know how the wheels stick out. So he like gets a little too close to the guy in front of him and then his wheel connects with the guy.
Insta-death. Yeah.
He's launched into a Nissan sign.
Yeah, like he just somehow he's in the middle of the air. The next, like, Rene Russo, Julia is screaming, and then it just cuts to the car just somehow just rocketing through the air towards the Nissan sign.
Oh, they can.
And this actually,
I don't know if it's that clean, but buddy, I think it's like the spa, fucking F1.
They're incredibly dangerous. Spa
Belgium 93 or something like that.
Yeah. Like, I have no doubt that, you know, you can lose control of that, but it's just the way that it looks is a little goofy.
You can now tell that it was the cars are more prone to disintegrate.
Yeah. Of course, because they weigh less.
They weigh way less, but like those, all that downforce, if you get air under that.
Also, there are so many explosions in this movie.
So many.
There are so many vehicles. There are vehicles that look like toys. There are as many vehicles that look like toys and explosions as in a Michael Bay Transformers
movie. I love it. And they've
they went yards
and it's a lot of fun.
So he bounces out of time, like a Pop Tart down on the table, and the doctors are all chuckling, congratulate each other, and they say, "All right, let's sedate him and pack him up." But then like nobody sedates him.
I love it too, because for my favorite thing, this movie actually did it correctly, of if you do time travel, you have to do it dead. So they have to resuscitate. They have to like shock him back to life. He's dead.
That's true. Yeah. They resuscitate and they find a pulse. And I guess for like, again, just some questions about how this whole economy works, but I guess most of them are brain dead when they come through. But
I guess. Yeah.
Alex is like, "Oh, I guess I didn't win." Like,
they're like, "What the fuck? Okay. Oh, I love this shit. Okay. They're
break
like,
out
okay.
the lobotomizer.
Oh my God. Get out the lobotomizer. The lobotomy gun."
Oh,
and
man.
They're like, "Okay, we'll zap him. That'll clear his brain. That'll make him shut up." And he's like, "What the kind of fucking hospital is this?" And then there is a fight with the lobotomy gun.
Yeah. By the way, do not operate lobotomizer in a moving vehicle. Okay.
Clearly.
Just caught a flash of that sign.
Because it just shoots electricity. That's it. That's all it does.
Fucking.
And it's funny. It reminded me of, From Beyond, like when the guy's pineal gland comes out,
weird.
Like the tip wire of this thing was moving around.
Oh, it's upsetting. It's
and upsetting. I love. I'm very nostalgic. I mean, I'm old now, guys, so I'm starting to become nostalgic.
I just turned 35.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus, never say that again.
I do really enjoy that the that electricity effect, you know, where it kind of looks like it's hand animated. Yeah. I miss that. Like,
it's cute, yeah.
Yeah, that and the Star Wars blaster blue shit later. Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
It actually worked.
Yeah. The equipment in this movie is something between goofy, but yet somehow practical at the same time, because we learn later that these guys are basically wearing power armor.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm like, okay, this, but it looks like it works. So I'm not mad.
It does lean towards goofy in a couple spots. I have some things to say about that.
Okay, cool.
This lobotomizer prop isn't great either, but also like the cars later are way more Atom Punk. It's much more like Big O style than what I call it. Like what I would imagine is cyberpunk. But again,
you know what they remind me of?
They're really bulky.
Specifically the production company, being in-house and not wanting to listen to the director's ideas or
Well, you know what, like the rich people cars, right? You know what they weirdly reminded me of those weird cars in Red Faction Guerrilla when you get to like the civilized areas. It's weird design choice.
Well, the other thing too is that so this was like one missed opportunity and possibly an action scene they cut from the movie. The driver is outside. And it's situated centrally.
Why is this? The gig economy is really tough.
I would imagine, you know, if were there rain, there would be some sort of covering that comes up or something like that. But the point is like he drove an F1 car, which is situated like the driver's in the middle. It was like he needed to drive one of these through a bunch of shit.
He didn't at all. They just put him in like a beat up old truck, which was kind of funny. The champagne delivery.
The champagne.
Talk
about it.
I love that.
Speaking of chases, which this movie has a lot of, at this moment, the bone jackers are jacked by some ambushers in the
road. I love that name too. The bone jackers.
And there's a big explosion in the pond. Now
you'll be brought directly to this film.
Don't try that.
Don't do it.
There's a big explosion. Alex gets out and run. That's what I have in my notes. Run. There's a really neat scene where he locks eyes with Vincendic. Vincendic. And that was the opening line, actually. It was he locks eyes and what does he say?
Get the meat.
Yeah. God, I love McGregor's line delivery sometimes.
He has a lyrical quality to everything he says. It's wonderful.
You know what?
Top, but it is great. Like
he acts like I act. he knows he's in a scene. He can't help but smirk on the corners of his mouth.
This movie is not immersive whatsoever. You're
not with him
in spite really anything, honestly. But it's fun. It's fun.
So he's running through like an urban hellscape. He's trying to escape bone jackers. He ends up getting in like an armored cab.
I love this dude. Oh, yeah. He's like, he pulls a 38 on him and he's like, oh yeah, man, it's dangerous out there. But you know,
in the dark, he's like, vintage watch.
Yeah. He's like, okay. Yeah. Take it. So he gives him his watch and he's like, oh, cool. And then he just takes off. And then he's like, oh no. Cause he realizes who he is. Cause bone jackers are like,
Bone jackers trying to pull him over. Yeah.
And then he's like, oh shit. And then he just tries to shoot him through the cab. Yeah. Like the cab ride is like not even like 10 seconds. It's really funny.
On my YouTube watch, I didn't know what happened there.
It gets him.
I just saw him rolling out of the back of the cab. I was like, "What the fuck happened?"
It gets him back into his old neighborhood. They make a big deal traveling through this too. That's just like they're going from Sector 3 to Sector 2, which is more dangerous activity. And like the Bone Jackers have a pretty good intelligence network. Like they were able to tell the ambush was coming. I'm just talking about the things in the movie that remind me the most of like practical Spot stuff shotter. I would do for a role player game. So the cab ride gets him to his old neighborhood back where he lived, and everything's fucked up.
It's not.
Doesn't look like New York.
Have we been told what the future is yet?
No, not yet.
Not quite yet. He goes back to his apartment, and then he tries to get in. So, like someone that he knew is still living there. He comes out with a door. Shotgun.
Raul. He's like, Raul, it's me. And it's he's like, you know, me and my wife. And he's like, what the fuck? And then he just lets him in, which because he's like confused about it. Yeah. Like, holy shit, I know this guy. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then he goes up to the his old apartment, and you know, someone else is living there. You know, Alex at this point Julie's does not understand what's going on.
Yeah, it's like this elderly couple are living there, and they're like, "You mean the where's my wife, Julie?" And she's like, "You mean the person who sold us this apartment?"
Yeah,
like how many years ago?
And that's where we get the first. He's a free jack, which I just got to say, I'm not happy with the colloquial terminology, the lingo of the movie. I think Free Jack's kind of a dumb title for these guys.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. It sounds like something I do daily.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, I was going to say, like, at the time, that was not sex positive. It was more just a cool sounding thing because Jack, you know, was cyber part of that whole noise.
Yeah. Jacking in.
So because they took that and extrapolated it into using a jack for a design element. There's like a jack.
Yeah, that's
where it hurts.
Logo for the company. There's jacks in the design later.
What is the purpose of that? Was that an afterthought? Like, or is there symbology behind that?
I bet you that was
probably written in, you know, that was, they yeah. probably worked that out.
Is,
yeah.
I mean,
it's fine. That's where I'll go with it.
So anyway, they say he's a free
jack. It's not great.
No.
Yeah.
He runs outside. He sees the New York City downtown skyline, and it's just loaded with, you know, big visual ads, VR.
I think there was like a suicide assistance sign too.
Yeah. Suicide, and then assistance.
And then you see the electronic billboard that says the date.
The date. Today's date.
Yes.
Like November 23rd. 2009. Man.
Oh man, I was
a lot rougher than I remember it.
It was my second year at Columbia.
that was my first.
Although the fucking dream.
Although, like, props to this film for like predicting the recession,
the 2008 financial crash. Yeah,
a little bit.
Although in this movie, I think it came like
a lot sooner.
There's a character that says, you know, there was the 10-year depression.
There's the 10-year depression.
That tracks.
America lost the trade war. This we'll talk about it in a little bit. But yeah, there's a couple of things that are neat.
Yeah, I do enjoy. This movie doesn't really do exposition well a lot of the time, but those little details are fun.
Well, that's the thing. It shows. It doesn't tell.
Yeah. Oh, like, and this is where we also
got lost.
Speaking of showing, this is where we also see that the McCandless building, which is also, we found out, called the spiritual switchboard.
Yeah.
Is actually taller.
It. I like it, actually.
It's actually taller than the Twin Towers, which you're still seeing.
Yeah, I like
that. It is a cool looking building, but again, has
except
a
for the top.
Jack at the top.
Except for the top.
Is that,
I mean, if you don't know exactly what you're looking at and you're watching it at 144p, even though I knew what it looked like and I did think it was dumb at the time, I was like, is that a weather vane? You know, like that could be, are they going to have a rooster on top of that thing? Like,
yeah, that's what it looks like a little bit. I'm like, if it helped, I mean, when I saw that, when they show the skyline where, you know, obviously that's not where they're filming, but the mega tower was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah,
I like that they just took footage and slapped up.
Yeah, because the entire
TVs on things, and I was like, you know what, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
enough. Yeah. No, I don't know if I said it or not because we were talking about it. I'm like, this was filmed in Atlanta, Georgia, right?
Yeah. Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
And because the entire time I'm watching this, I'm like, this does not look like New York.
Yeah, and I guess a little bit of it was filmed in Greece.
Awesome.
They did 2 or 3 weeks on location in New York. But yeah, the bulk of it was filmed in Atlanta.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. There was a very dated look to this film. And in a way that, for some reason, like early 90s and 80s movies that take place in like modern day New York
would look a lot grimier, honestly.
Yeah.
That's what, like, I remember 90s New York.
Well, it's funny because, like Blade Runner, that's L.A. in 1909, you know? Yeah. And then this is the East Coast.
Yeah.
And it's, like, not as orange.
Hmm. So we find out.
Which is not true.
Yeah.
as of a year ago or something.
Yeah. Next, we show up to, actually, we move over to the McCandless building where Mick Jagger has to report on his screw up in delivering the body. And this is where we first meet Mitchellette, who is
the actor, Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks.
He's also
Breaking Bad.
What a smug fuck.
Yeah, who you will also recognize as Mike from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He's like, this is the third, like, other than those two shows, this is the only thing I've ever seen him in. And you know what? He fucking owns, like,
yeah,
he's probably the most serious character.
McCandless's corporation's second in command, and in case you couldn't tell, he's supposed to be an oligarch. He's like literally sitting on a platinum throne, planting his Fabergé eggs.
Yeah, and I do really like his suit, honestly. It's got kind of like that Victorian kind of damask design.
Was it supposed to be implied that they were using time travel to get like a Fabergé egg?
You know?
I don't know.
I kind of felt that was implied because he had a lot of artifacts that, let's be real, in the nightmare future of 2009, those might not exist anymore.
I just thought he had bad taste is all because...
Yeah, that's what just came to my mind of the idea that he's like nicking artifacts for all throughout time.
He didn't go too heavy into it.
This is the first part where you start to realize how like horrible the org chart must be over there, because this is This is Michelet. Vincendick is a contractor to Michelet, but he works for McCandless. But McCandless controls Michelet, and Michelet oversees Vincendick, but he doesn't answer to Michelet. He answers to McCandless, unless he's on McCandless business, but not strictly on McCandless property. So it's kind of like, what is going on with who's in charge here? Please.
All I know is they must get paid just, very well.
I stared off into the middle distance about halfway through that.
So like,
I was like, oh.
Michelet tries to fire Vincendick, and Vincendick's kind of like, I'll complete my contract. And I got to tell you, too, this is where you start to realize, like, it's not just the coat, it's not just the helmet. He dresses like a medieval warlord. He's got, like,
oh, yeah.
Like a brigandine male shirt on. It gets up and is very imposing in his little scene with Michelet.
His jackets are like armored.
Yeah.
It's an armor jack. It's like the cyberpunk definition of an armor jack.
Yep. I love it.
It almost looks like pants too, the way it's split. Like when he stands with his legs apart, you know, there's like the split. It kind of just bunches around his legs. All of his entire wardrobe has the effect of making him look larger than he is.
Yes.
But his neck is too long. And it just kind of gives the whole thing away.
Oh, that's fine. He looks great.
I love it. He looks like a toddler with that helmet on. It's just, and he's like trying to own it so hard, you know. And I'm just like, I'm there for you, buddy. You know, like it's so good.
It works. He looks pretty mean.
He tries, man.
But then next we move to the scene in the church where Alex has broken into the bottom of a church and passed out from exhaustion after running from Bojackers all night long. And a nun finds him in the morning.
One of my favorite cinematic nuns right here.
It's one of my favorite actresses. Yeah. Every time she shows up in something, I'm like, you are an incredible character actress. I'm glad you're here.
Oh, yeah. Man. So Amanda Plummer's the nun. She's fantastic. Fuck and she wakes him up with a shotgun in his face. It's pretty great.
She talks a bunch of shit.
We have a little banter.
Every line that she has in this movie is like
fantastic. It's fire.
It's amazing.
It's fire. She's so good.
She's such an asshole.
But not. She sends him on his way, and then she's like, hey. And he turns around, and she tosses him a handgun. It's very much reminiscent of that whole like old Pittsburgh Steelers jersey Coca-Cola commercial. Like, I don't know. That's a reference like fucking 10 of you are going to get.
She says the Lord moves in mysterious ways.
She totally, like, she throws him a Glock and sends him on his way. And she's the one who explains to him that, you know, what he is. He's a free jack, rich schmuck.
This is what I'm talking about.
She explains it's a mind transplant. That's the big point here.
In science fiction movies, you have this trope of, like, the idiot, the guy who doesn't really know anything about the world that he's living in, and you know,
yeah, stranger in a strange land, you know.
And so I find that there are a few times in this movie where they kind of drop a lot of exposition in this way. It makes sense for this scene.
It wasn't even a lot. It was quick too. Yeah, where
it's very like, quick. No, it's not long enough, in my opinion. She's hilarious in this.
It's like, hey, your ex-wife isn't in the computer. Your wife, ex-wife, I don't know, but like,
she's not in the computer.
Yeah, we have no idea.
I think she might be dead.
At the time. You know, like,
and he gets the address. These are bad news. She's a nun, and she's just like, "Yeah, you're fucked, man."
And she gets Brad's address. He's able to get Brad's address. His old agent, his old manager, whatever, and finds out that he is still alive. She gives him that address and kind of sends him on his way. But yeah, for being a scene of exposition, it was quite well done and breezy. You know, tedious.
It's because of her delivery.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She's actually given, whoever did the punch up on this, they actually did a good job with her. Mm. And especially in this moment, because it's over before you realize, oh, fuck, that was just a info dump. Okay, fine. You know,
and she's a great character. Do it. Like, she's, when she shows up, it's like, oh, this is great. Like, she's funny.
Yeah. It sucks that she only has like two scenes.
Yeah. But she owns them
so hard.
Yes,
they're great.
Yes, she does.
So he's walking down the street of not New York, fucked up 2009. And
next scene, we quickly jump over to Vincendick.
We see
the Bonejacker headquarters, which looks like if a Klingon decorated a Starfleet cabin.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right.
Sure.
I'll allow it.
And we find out that earlier they mentioned too that in the beginning that there's 7 million worth of merchandise that they were transporting, and that was Alex.
I love, I love how Alex, like the price on Alex's head just like keeps going up, throughout the movie. Oh, yeah.
Well, and here that we realize like Ripper, who I guess does all the accounting, is like, we're projecting $17 million in retrieval costs. And it's just like, oh, is this, are you even going to keep doing this then?
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, man,
this, now it's a pride thing.
Well, other than like a couple of bits of information, like, I don't know, this scene doesn't seem to really have a whole lot of purpose.
Well, the cool part is a tech issue where they're like, okay, they upload him to the system, so if he passes by any vid phones, they're going to be able to spot him. I was like, okay, that's smart.
Sure. Yeah, they got like voice recognition and like facial recognition.
The sensor in 2009.
Yes,
sure.
Like now.
And for some reason, Mick Jagger seems to be sorting jelly beans by flavor. Like I was, I've been reminded to see like three or four times.
I thought he was rolling like a joint.
Yeah. That's kind of what it looked
like. I thought he was just making a cigarette.
It looked like a tiny little spoon. He was sorting jelly beans, and then he starts munching them because he's like,
maybe, I don't know. He's Mick Jagger. He do whatever the fuck he wants.
It's his writer.
Or
it's his writer.
Be future drugs, you know? I mean, like.
Yes, they mentioned that. I love that term.
But there's a neat scene here where him and his second command, Ripper, like, Mick Jagger's like, hey, you know, that was privileged information. We have to have a rat, basically. And he makes him test him. So it's like a battle of wills here. But then at the end, it's beautiful. Well, he's like, I can't believe you would test me. And Mick's like, I'm not testing you, Ripper. I'm testing the machine.
Yeah. And this, this interaction, like, so he like puts his hand down on this little scanner and then he spits out like this long digit number. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you find out later that's, you know, a personal ID number, and you know you're not supposed to share it with anybody.
Your social credit score, I'm sure.
Yeah,
basically. Sure. But the way that it's done, like you, it makes it seem like Ripper is going to be a bigger part of this movie.
Yeah,
you know, and he's a smarter. And part. I was interested because you know he seemed like a really cool character, and like
for sure,
you know, they could have done something with that.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of stiffed him.
Yeah, Mick had a good number too.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That really Mick. Never
it could have been better utilized. Mick. Could have been better utilized.
It never.
You're an actual actor.
But he explains all the techie bits for Mick when something needs to be filled in, and seems like a pretty competent and a likable character. I didn't think anything.
Yeah. No, he's like, it's weird. Like, you like a lot of people in this movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you get it. You get where they're coming from, except for fucking Mojo.
Then we get Alex walking down a cyberpunk, you know, city street alleyway, and you get boobs, you get Ministry playing in the background, and
hell yeah, yeah.
He's walking through here, and next thing you know, Black War.
Yeah.
And it's like the tong from
out of nowhere because he's like trying
like
to,
you do.
It's like the Tong from Big Trouble in Little China is fighting like the Duke of New York's forces.
Yeah. Except like one of them is wearing like he's a black guy, but he's wearing like a helmet with like a Confederate flag.
No.
I noticed that. Yeah.
That guy. I thought that guy was white, but he's like next to a guy.
No, he's not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really both black weird. And it's confusing. But Duke of New York, he's a number one. Whatever.
It goes by so quickly too.
I think it's meant to be confusing.
Yeah, I think it's meant to show like.
Well, you could just you
it's
could
fucked up in the future.
Well, it's so, it's
you could
also
have him just walking down the street, or you could turn on that faucet, pay some people, get some bullets going.
Yep.
I also understand that there was a lot of scenes that showed like the cheapness of human life in the future that had to be cut for one reason or another. So this is, I guess, playing into that. But maybe this is kind of like just showing how effed up like everybody's relationships and alliances are.
Yeah,
because because he's like trying to find this address from this dude who's just staring off into the distance. He looks like he's on drugs. And then this guy just walks up with a fucking Uzi, and then he just gacks, like he grabs Emilio, uses him as a human shield, and then he just
and then lets him go.
Blasts away this dude down the street for
very weird. Yeah. Very weird.
And then that's just it. There's just violence and then, now. Like he's just running and he ends up running into the apartment building, which has like all the water damage.
Yeah, you would think like, shitty, that would be slightly traumatic for someone, you know, who wasn't accustomed to all this street violence.
Slightly better
just suddenly thrown into it, but
than the apartment building in Children of Men. Only slightly though.
Yes.
But this is Brad's apartment. This is a really cool little trick that Brad's got going here too, I thought was nicely done.
Oh, I love it. The wall.
Oh, yeah.
Because he finds his
His manager.
He finds his address.
Brad's such address. A fucking sleaze.
He knocks on one door, and he's not getting an answer at that door, so then he just goes, like, I guess, to the next door down the hall, and he's knocking, which isn't his apartment, but that is where Brad is, because Brad has, like, a secret pass-through to his actual apartment, where, like...
Yeah, he says something about, you know, not showing your wealth. Like, you don't want to show people your wealth.
But... Yeah, he's like, if you show people what you have, it's going to be gone, and then he, like, lets him into this, like, pretty shitty apartment on the other side too. It's like, okay, these are, there's a difference though. Okay,
I he's got a point.
Yeah, I mean, it's much nicer than like the piss stained mattress on the floor of his cover apartment.
Sure.
Yeah.
I could fix the dent on my car, or it's like,
and again, some pretty greatly delivered exposition from Dave Johansson. Again, just a real energy, high energy character, same as Amanda Plummer on screen. Helping poor Alex through like his reality, and this is where
he's saying too, like that he had him insured, and he's like, "You had me insured." It's like, "I insure all my drivers. You're the only one though that I couldn't like, you know," because he said he was looking for bits of him during the crash, like a nose, a finger, anything, because he got nothing from his death. Basically,
why is this a revelation? This seems the most like, of course you would.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you would think like it becomes established that everybody knows what the fucking free jack is, so you would think
that's the fucking craziest thing about it. Like, how bad are they?
And like, well, like, at, like half the time people don't know what a free jack is, but then everybody else also does know what a free jack is.
Oh yeah, because it's all over the TV and stuff. But like, the thing about it is, now you have to consider, when he is brought to the future, he breaks his bonds and escapes. How often does that have to happen for people to be like
often
rooting
enough
for
them,
free jacks?
Often enough for people to know what a free jack is. So
yeah, it's like in the lexicon.
Yeah, because they're not afraid of him. They're afraid of the heat he can bring.
Right.
But I think it is also implied that, well, because you can tell that, like, you know, when Mick Jagger starts out in the movie, he's Mr. Frowny Man the whole time. And then, you know, as the movie progresses, you know, you can tell that he's having fun. He's, like, enjoying chasing Alex through the city.
He gets smirks. He has back and forths with them.
Yeah.
A lot of
So it's implied that, you know, since he's so good at his job, even if someone does become a free jack, they're not a free jack for long.
Right. So he's like, you know, what else would I be doing?
Yeah.
Sorting fucking jelly beans, playing a game on my little screen.
Playing an abstract indie game.
Well, playing with obviously a retro video game, right? This is 2009, and he's playing like Q-Bird or something.
We'll get there.
And then a little bit more exposition. This is a part where Alex is like, "Why me?" And then, you know, Brad gets to talk about space-time coordinates that I'm sure he's not qualified to talk about.
Right.
And and we figure out that, like, because it was such a spectacular death, and they know the place and the time, that he makes him a good candidate for bone jacking, for pulling back from the past.
And he also explains that, you know, the reason that they don't use people from modern times is because everybody's, you know, riddled with
COVID,
fucking everything.
Like cancers and pollution,
benzene,
and
lead,
radiation,
like all the pollution.
Yeah.
And if they only knew about our balls.
And this is And this is hilarious to me because it's 18 years later, and this dude looks exactly the fucking same. And so does Julia.
Most of them do.
Yeah, everyone does.
And I remember, too, thinking, like, when I first watched the movie, like, I was thinking, okay, whatever, it's a movie. 18 years, that seems a little silly. Do you know, just like 2 days ago, they released a study on PFAS released by 3M and how it's in all of us and everywhere and everything forever. So
microplastics in the balls, y'all.
Again, prescient.
I hate that.
They really called it.
Yeah, that's why I
agree. It sounds really romantic when they say forever chemicals.
Everything. Well, they predicted everything but the microplastics.
What if Freejack was advice from the past sent to the future?
See?
It wasn't a title of a movie. It was like, this is the only way to get them out.
Well, that's actually another neat piece too, because in a minute or two, the two of them go walking through the street, and he's like, "Oh, you're walking too healthy. Walk more effed up. And
right.
Like, walk with a limp." And if you think about it,
limp, sir.
If he's really trying to avoid the vidphones, that would be the way to do it, right? They say that it's the gait identification that gets you. Just put on a
different you can tell that this was pattern thought about, because like even when they're talking to he's talking to Amanda Plummer, she's like, "Here's some food. Hide it."
Yeah.
You know,
it's there's like you don't know what the fuck you're doing, and all these people are like, all right, I'll give you a hand, I'll get you through this part or whatever. It's really interesting because it could go either way with him, like who yeah. he meets, they could be, but and they often are. As yeah. we find out.
But Brad also tells him, like, yeah, I know Julie's an exec now. We should totally reach out to her. We should get in touch with her. And that's how they end up on the street walking to, I guess, a vid phone.
Mm-hmm. They walk into a diner. And I love this diner.
This is a great scene. This scene stayed with me like years after the movie.
This dude's great.
Because they walk in and, the scene basically starts with this plate of what appears to be like stewed meat with what looks like green beans on the side. And
dog
it looks
food
like,
with a garnish of green beans.
Yeah, it looks like puke.
And I'm so glad I watched this in 144p.
It looks upsetting, but he eats it later. But like, it's this big old, he's older. He's an old guy, but he's like face like a bulldog. He looks like an asshole, and he is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I waited 20 minutes for this shit.
It's
like,
and he's missing four bottom teeth.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he looks fucked up. It's like, I waited 20 minutes for this slop. And the waitress is like, well, I could always take it back. He's like, fuck you. And then just eats it anyway. And it's just a shitty looking diner, man. It's barely a diner.
Yeah. That kind of energy for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he does shoot someone. But... So he's like, his agent's like, all right, I'm going to make the call. And he's like, why don't I make it? And he's like, well, and he has a good point.
Because his voice.
Yeah. Like if you do this. Yeah. Yes. Even near them. Yeah. I also appreciate in the future there's phone booths.
Okay. I'm getting an alert from Shadowlink. Coin Ops here. As you can tell by me speaking here in another time and place, that we had a bit of a recording. Fortunately, our pain is your gain, as it were, and you get a whole extra second episode out of it. So bear with us.